Hello and welcome to Misbehave, the podcast where we explore human behavior in a business context. Season 2 of Misbehave is all about uncovering behavioral patterns which create success in life and business. We're joined by highly driven, accomplished individuals to assess their behavioral patterns and dive into how behaviors have influenced their journey. In this episode, we're joined by Aaron Embleton, former England Lioness who had her first national call-up at the age of just 14. We talk about everything from breaking down barriers in football as a young girl at a time where the women's game was far from where it is now, to the mindset needed to succeed in high-performance environments, to the influences that really helped shape the trajectory of her career and life overall. Well, welcome, Aaron. We're really pleased that you've joined us today. Let's start with, you were the first girl from the Northeast to join the Women's England team at a really young age. Tell us a little bit about what that felt like.
Yeah, it was, I mean, from a very young age, there was no one really from up here, from North. It was all Southern. And it was all the likes of Arsenal at the time, Charlton Athletic, and those were the kind of teams I looked up to and the players that played in those teams. And basically, I just thought, why isn't there anyone from up here? And I was very young, I think I was about 12 or 13, and there was a lot of talk of me potentially for the future. They must have seen this young lass, I was tiny, with my little football kit on and my yoga hat on, my Newcastle top. And there was a lot of people saying, like, she's going to play for England, this kid, she's going to play for England. So I'd heard it from parents and stuff like that, and then it was one of them on the sideline of one game, and I clearly wasn't meant to hear it, but I did. And it was, I heard one of them say, she's got no chance because she's from up north, like she'll never get picked for a country because there's no one in the Northeast getting picked. And I think there was one other lady back in the 70s that was picked, and I don't think at that point the FA, it was affiliated, it was called England, but I don't think the FA was affiliated yet. And I remember coming home and saying to my dad, I heard something on the sideline, and he was like, well, there's no reason why it couldn't be you. And my dad was very sport orientated. He was in the county for clear pigeon shooting, everything he can't seem to take up, even golf, he was exceptional at. And he kind of instilled this attitude in us from a very young age that nothing was ever impossible, not if you put your mind to it and you go the extra lengths. And I stood by that my whole life and flew with it. And I was like, right, there's nothing to stop me. There's not just me in the Northeast. There's other good players. To me, it was like, well, just because I come from Newcastle, why can't I be picked? So I kind of made it a bit of an obsession to break down the barriers and thought, you know, I am going to get there and I'll do whatever it takes to knock down those walls. And the journey began from there. And that's exactly what happened.
And I think that's so interesting, isn't it? Because I think when you hear stuff like that, we talk about them as like, they either become a limiting belief and you're almost like, God, maybe I can't do that then. Mm-hmm. Or they become this advancing belief where you're like, well, I'm going to prove you wrong and I'm going to show you.
Yeah.
But it can go either way, can't it, with comments like that? And I think people don't realise that when they say things like that.
100%. It can be so detrimental. And I've heard stuff even coaching on the sideline. I've seen kids' reactions to things and it has gone the completely opposite way. And, you know, they've said, oh, I don't want to play anymore. And I've seen them crying off to their parents and I've thought, this is horrific. Do you know what I mean? But then you've got from a different point of view of the way I was, and I take anything as a challenge, and I'm probably sure you'll have seen from the things that I filled out with you that I kind of use it to kind of say, do you know what it is? All right, I'm going to prove you're wrong. And that's exactly what I set out to do. And I suppose the results showed that, but it was a long journey and I got there and it opened a lot of doors for other people in the Northeast, and which is shown right now, which is good.
I want to come on to that journey in a second, but I'd also think it's worthwhile saying that you are a product of your environment, and there's a lot of talk about that. And, you know, some people, even with the best intention, that person might have just been pointing out that actually it's tricky if you're up from the Northeast. There was no malice in that comment, but sometimes it can be taken out of context, or if you hadn't gone home and had that environment where you were given the belief that you could do anything you wanted to do, and you saw that your dad was a success role model, I suppose, for you to think, well, he can apply himself. Mm-hmm. So therefore, you had that role model in your environment.
Yes.
And I think that's why it's so important for us to be mindful that not everybody has that kind of environment at home.
No.
And, mm-hmm. you know, encouraging uh-huh. at grassroots that piece around instilling that belief in people,
yeah, yeah.
because you can get that belief at any point, right? It's mm-hmm. not, you don't have to be nurtured in it.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be a parent role
it
model,
doesn't.
Does it?
No, I'm really interested in that. Tell us a bit about the journey. You said it was hard. What were some of the things, some of the biggest challenges that you faced?
In football in general, prior to kind of international with the women, was ultimately being a girl playing football and trying to fit in, and even at the point I wanted me cut my hair short because I felt I would be more accepting of joining in with the lads. And I was at like a centre of excellence in Blyth at the time, and it was a bit like what Wallsend boys are kind of renowned in the northeast of being, you know, the top level of football. And I was a part of that elite development team, and there was coaches used to come quite a lot, scouts from all over. And one of them was from Man City at the time, not as high up as Man City is now at the top of the Premier League, but they were lower end of the Premier League. And until they realised I was a girl, they'd approached my dad, and my dad was like, it's a girl. And they're like, oh, right, okay, there's nothing we can kind of do now.
Really?
That's crazy,
yeah.
Isn't it?
And that was purely the fact that, you know, there was no women's football being professional. There was, for a young girl, they looked up to these players that played in the Premier League, the likes of Wayne Rooney at the time, David Beckham was massive, and they had this big facade. But for a young girl looking, they didn't have the likes of Lucy Bronze out there now, Jill Scott that there is. I was looking at David Beckham, but also knowing that the chances of me being able to make a professional was probably very slim. It was never going to happen. And that was just purely down to me being a girl. So that was difficult. You know, I was quite fortunate because of my ability that it was never in question with the boys. So they knocked on my door every day to kind of, you know, can Aaron come out to play? And I was part of them, really. And I know a lot of people I've played with a similar sort of age. That wasn't the case.
Right.
And they didn't. They were left out and they wanted to join in but couldn't join in. And it was more of a bit of they were picked on because they were a girl. So that has been a lot of challenges, even travelling. You know, there was two women's football teams in the northeast when I played. There were only two. Now there's one in every town. So to want to play for England, which the England manager said, I need to play for a Premier League team. In order to do that, the closest Premier League team for me was Doncaster Bells. So I had to leave the North East, unfortunately, and go and play for Doncaster to continue playing for England when I eventually got in there, you know. But yeah, there's been a lot of challenges, and it's purely been down to the perception of people and what they've thought about women's sport in general, not just women's football. It was kind of put on the back burner, as you probably know yourselves, and there was no audience for it. We kept saying there's no funding for it. We struggled for sponsorship, and a few times, you know, the clubs nearly folded in the northeast, and that's because we couldn't get money. Our parents got involved. They tried to help fund that and go out there and look for businesses, try and pump money in, but we were just coming back one after the other. There's no money in women's football, and they couldn't see what they were going to get out of it, which was sad. But obviously, as a business, they want to get their name out, and women's football couldn't offer that.
It was a reality, I suppose, wasn't
yeah.
it? At that time. Yeah.
Yeah.
What did that feel like for you, Aaron? Because obviously your behaviours tell us that you're somebody that, if there's an obstacle in the way, you will do everything that you can to overcome it.
Yeah.
But things like that, it's bigger than you, right? Mm-hmm. It's a systemic issue at that point.
Mm-hmm.
How did that feel? And did that feel overwhelming and out of your control? Or what did you do to kind of manage that in your own way, I suppose?
It did. It felt completely out of my control. I even ended up getting my uncle to sponsor a team in the end. You know, I was doing everything I could, and he's got a big building business in the northeast, and he kind of stepped in when we went for help. The woman said, we need help just to get our bus on a weekend. But yeah, and I think from my point of view, I think it was all about making it to an international level for me to be able to make a global change. And that was for this side of the country. So I knew little old Mayor Cramlington in Brookside was going to really struggle to change, you know, a country's point of view and people's perception. But ultimately, I had to take it all the way to kind of at least try and make some sort of divot in it. Obviously, that has dramatically changed now, and that's brilliant. But at the time, yeah, it was difficult. It was difficult. And it was hard for me personally, exactly what you're saying. I see a barrier in front of us. And to me, I'll work out every single angle I can go at or how I'm going to get past that barrier and how I'm, when I get through it, how am I going to sustain it? And sometimes, although it's hard for me to comprehend, I have to realise sometimes I kind of change the world even though I want to.
Well, you've certainly influenced it. And that, I mean, I want to say thank you because, to be fair, if we don't have people with your kind of attitude driving and paving the way, incremental change doesn't happen. And since you were in that position, there's been huge change and you were a piece of that. And I think, you know, history, often we can find ourselves in positions where we think, well, what can we do? But actually, if everybody had that attitude, nobody would ever do anything.
Yeah.
So, yeah, thank you for that because, you know, we've seen not just in football, but in lots of areas where there has been change and there's still lots of change still to come for sure.
And people often do step back, don't they? And they go, well, I can't influence that, so therefore mm-hmm. they don't even try.
Yeah.
And actually, sometimes all it takes is one person doing something that then inspires someone else, and it's that domino effect, isn't it?
100%. And I've kind of, it's a transition with not just when women's football didn't have anything I could make any sort of career out of, because obviously there wasn't the audience for it, not like there is now. You know, I then ended up where, when I came away from football, it was like my skills were in football and I'd been academy after an academy. What do I do now? And I was a qualified coach, but again, the coaching was only in summer holidays when the kids were off school. So I was kind of, what do I do? So I ended up going out and I ended up in sales and a call centre job. And it's the same attitude I live and breathe with my job now. And I do it with everything in my life, not even just my job. You can put my behaviours and the way I think, they seem to be quite successful. They haven't gone wrong so far, but they seem to have worked, and I help my team around us even at work. Like, even take for today, my manager wasn't well. She said, "Darren, like, I need to go home." And I was like, "Okay." She was like, "Well, you drive the team for us. I'll be on Teams if you need us, but I really need you to help drive this team today, and we need numbers." So, yeah, that was me again. And I just feel like sometimes when people have negative thoughts, I get people have down days. Everyone does. I do, you do, and everyone else. But if you let the negativity get to you, it'll destroy how you perform that day. And if you just put that to one side straight away and then continue, you can pull it back how it dropped off, you know, from a touch of a button. So I do it with my team as well. I pull them along and I hope I have a positive impact on them, but I try and help them hit their targets, even when they struggle.
It's interesting to just look at that sales piece because a lot of the listeners will have a sales function in their business. And it's actually, you know, it's a big piece around performance and achieving some of the fundamental things that a business needs to succeed commercially. You've managed to transition that role. And one of the things I think is interesting is, obviously, when you're doing sales, unless you have reoccurring sales that happen all of the time, often you get to the start of a month and you're almost the sheets clean and you've got to start again. Yeah. And I know in a team sport, particularly in football, you're almost measured on your last game. And you can be super unpopular if, like, the last game didn't go too well. And similarly in sales, you have to be so resilient. As a player, you have to. And tell us a little bit about that, how you've managed to almost transition that resilience into the role that you're in now. And maybe that's why you're thriving in sales.
I think it's just down to being headstrong. And I've always been one of these that I want to be the best I can possibly be with anything I do. And I'm sure that came across in what I filled in. It really is. That's the way I am. And I don't just want it for me. I want it for the people around us as well. Because I say exactly what you're saying. Like, I'm in a team and I thought, my dad used to say this to us and, like, I just didn't believe him because sometimes you just don't listen to parents, do you? No one ever does when you're a kid. And he used to say, you know, like, you're were one of a kind. And I used to think, what does he mean by that? And it wasn't until me and my sister were talking not even a month ago about this, and it was, and now actually accept and realise that the way we think is a lot different to other people. And I just push as much as I can to help those individuals. So it's more so for other people than it is for me. I even in my team, I'll say to them, like, if you hit your target the day, or you get, if they were, I don't know, if their target was 6, and I say, oh, well, yesterday you did 6, we'll do 8 the day, I'll buy you a cup of coffee at break. Now, I'm not the manager. Like, I'm just someone in their team, but I want them to hit their target, and I want them to do well. And rather than them, when they hit a hard time, whether that's they've dialed out, I don't know, maybe it's 20 calls, or they've taken 20 calls, whatever that may be, and they get to that point, which a lot of people do, where they just got, they need that deep breath and go, can I do this anymore? Like, I kick in and kind of say to them, look, make every single call your next call a brand new call. You had a bad call the one before. Let's not make that your day where I've had a bad day, because you hear it that often, don't you?
Yeah, for sure.
I've had a really bad day in a sales environment. It just takes one or two calls and you hear the people around you. They start mourning to the next person, and before you know it, you've created a negative atmosphere in the team, and no one's, you're saying the number's not moving, that's down to that. And I'll say to them, look, it was one call, forget about it. It doesn't matter. Is it going to affect you? Is it going to affect anybody else? No. Right then, the next one's a fresh one, and we start from the beginning as though it's your first call this morning when you've logged in. So that's how I look at it, and I try and help them to look at it that way and not be defeated over a few bad calls, because that doesn't need to write your day off. It's natural for that to happen. Just don't let it mentally get to you to where it'll bring you down.
If you're curious to know more about your leadership behaviours, click the link in the show notes to get a free leadership DNA profile for a limited time only. I think you've got a really lovely combination. So on your behavioural profile, I mean, you're 89% achievement. And bearing in mind that those motivations are split across 3.
Right,
so okay. We say anything over 33% is dominance. That's pretty high. I mean, not surprising given your background. But then you've also got this really lovely people piece in here. And I think that comes through in what you're describing there. It's like, right, how do we achieve first and foremost? But I want you to achieve. This isn't about me. This is about us collectively as a team. Do you think some of that came from playing a team sport for so long?
Yeah, I do, yeah. I think being in a team 24/7, I don't see it as a sole achievement. I don't see me playing internationally, even when I had to leave my team that I grew up with for 10 or 12 years before I had to go to a new team. I see it as we created that as a team. I couldn't have done it myself. There's another 10 players on the pitch. Yeah, I might have been the one scoring a lot of the goals, but ultimately I couldn't play 1 versus 11. I've still got my teammates around us that helped me achieve that and get there. And I still now look back and I still feel, you know, that honour is on them as well, not just me. Like, they were there with us the whole time of growing up from 10-year-old. And some of them were double my age when I was playing with them. But 100%, yeah, I think that had a massive effect on us. But I've got to say, I do put a lot of pressure on myself on a daily basis, because it thinking like that can be exhausting, because you're always looking of how you're going to hit your next target. And you're quite right when you're seeing the start of the month and the line gets drawn again and you hear people going, well, first of the month again, here we go. Like, it does naturally get draining. And luckily I'm good at resetting myself again to go, where again I say to a lot of people that I work with that when new people come in, it's easy to be able to have them new performers, they're fresh out there, they've just come out of training and they want to show how good they are. And you naturally see in any sales environment, those seem to thrive after they've had their bedding in time, more so than a tenured member of staff. But can they sustain it after that 4 or 5 month period? Are they still going to be hitting them same numbers? I do find that a lot of the time it's a no, and again, it's mental strength. They can do it, they've showed their ability, they can do it. Why haven't they been able to do that extra bit and continue
consistently.
The consistency's not there.
Which is hard in the sales environment, to be fair. That's the bit, isn't it? You can have a good month, but it's that consistency piece that's tricky.
Definitely, 100%.
One of the things I wanted to ask Erin was about, I mean, you, again, you're 90% external. And external is a pattern which basically suggests that you really, really thrive on feedback. And I know when we spoke, you were talking about you're just super curious about wanting to know how you can do things better.
Yes.
Linked to the achievement piece.
Yeah.
And that's really, I mean, that's pretty high. That being open to feedback, but not taking it in a personal way.
No.
Taking it in a way that pushes you forward. How do you stay hungry for that? Because, you know, it's a big piece to be able to receive feedback and not take it like as a hit, as a negative.
100%. And I know that when a lot of companies and places and organisations, you know, quite a few years ago, they brought in their 360 feedback and all of that. And a lot of people were like, oh, I don't want to do that. I'm scared. Like, oh, they're saying this. I'm not doing this. I'm not doing that. And I get that because people feel like it's a personal attack. Of course they do. They're like, oh. But for me, this is one of the major things that I feel like got me to where I was. I don't take it as personal because I proactively go to whoever my manager, I'll go to whatever I'm doing in life, I straight away want to know feedback. And to me, that's the only way you get to fully improve yourself because you're getting a true realistic view from other people. And I would video all my games. Well, my dad would video all my games and we would watch them back and we'd discuss them and he would tell me what he thought I need to improve on. Now I would have a look and see what I thought I didn't do so well on for the next game to try and look to improve that. You can never be perfect. Nothing is ever perfect in life. You can do it 100 times. You know, still never be perfect. But if you gain that feedback, you get different angles on it, then you can get as close as you can to improving your performance week on week. And I think that's massively important.
One of the things Laura and I, we do a lot of like exec coaching. And one of the things that is a fine balance is for people to be open for feedback, but to avoid being too self-deprecating. Because sometimes it can turn into like, you just feel like you're never good enough, particularly when you have high achievement in you, that strive for perfection. Is that something you've ever struggled with?
I wouldn't say I have, no, but naturally, like anything, I'm the same as everyone else. We've all got our kind of insecurities and we all feel that it's certain things, oh, will I be able to do this, won't I? And I've just changed a kind of campaign at work that I were doing, something fresh, and it was out of my comfort zone because it's something that I knew nothing about. It was starting, like, I felt like I was a brand new starter again. I was like, oh, here we go. And straight away I went out and wanted to listen to other people's calls. I wanted to pick their brains. So I was going around the floor and, like, finding out the lines they use, what assumptive clauses they use, how their call flow is, and dissecting the whole call till I pulled each and every bit in to see, oh, that person does that brilliant. I'm going to use that line. That person does that one brilliant. Oh, I'm going to use that line until I pull my whole call together. And obviously now it has come together, but that's what I do. I go out and seek there and find what's the best and the most comfortable way in the most successful way, who's doing it the best, who's got the best numbers on the board, why is theirs good, and pull it all together and I try and pull it as mine. There was once a saying said years ago, and it was, how was Bruce Lee, the martial arts expert, why was he as good as what he was? And it was the case of he went round and he pulled martial arts from karate, jiu-jitsu, taekwondo, and pulled them all together to make his own form of it. And that's always stuck in my head from years ago being a kid. I do that, I go around and I take a bit off that person. In actual fact, they're brilliant from my whole team or people on my floor that are good at certain things that I'm not good at, but I'll use it because they're doing well with it, it's successful, so it works and it's proven.
You don't need to reinvent the wheel every time. It's like, how do you put your own stamp on something that's already working?
That's it.
I'm interested to dig into a little bit because you are high detail, so you've got a preference for having detail.
Okay.
How does that translate through when you're commentating? Because obviously it's fast-paced and you haven't do it in the moment.
Yes.
How do you manage that in that environment?
Good question, really. Pretty much because I'm from a footballing background, obviously that does help. Obviously it does. And I've done coaching, and I think that helps because I'm very, as you can probably tell, I'm quite analytical, and I read in everything, and I kind of study everything. So it tends to come quite naturally. Don't get us wrong. I've come out with some absolute howlers like you do. But yeah, it's thinking on your feet. And I think it's more knowledge. I've been in that game a long time and played the sport for so long that, yeah, of course, you miss parts of the game at times because it's moving so fast. But, you know, there's things you can talk about, you know, the player's stats, how they've been previously performing, new players coming in. So sometimes if you can't keep up with the game because it is very fast-paced at times and I might only have the one monitor in front of us and you do miss things, like you can't catch everything without having multiple cameras, then I have other things I can talk about. But I do prepare a lot beforehand. That's a big part of it, again, preparation. It comes down to every single time, and I'll sit on before weekend and I'll spend hours upon hours, days, and looking over. Well, women's football you don't have as much stats out there for women's football than you do of men's football. Everything's there ready for you, made online with men's football. Women's, I have to sometimes manually tally goals up. Some players tally goals up where you can just go on and see exactly what each player with them in the males game, you can get that number. So it's preparation again for me, and a lot of what I'm mentioning, I'm hearing myself, which is odd, a pattern.
Isn't it?
We're going around like it's all about preparing and something.
I think that's a great lesson though, isn't it? Because that could be applied to anything, because often we'll have people say, oh, I'm Heidi ill, or I'm more reflective, or I don't do very well in situations that require us to react really quickly.
Yeah.
And actually the lesson there is, you can, but it's what you do before that point. That actually, if you have to react quickly in the moment and that type of behaviour is not as natural to you, how do you do the pre-preparation to ready yourself for that? It's interesting, we had somebody recently and she was going on a stage doing a talk, and it was a panel discussion. And we were talking her through, you know, how to prepare for her. And it was really interesting because she'd got a load of advice from lots of different people. And the different people she'd got advice from had totally different behavioural patterns. And she was actually the opposite, where she's not detailed, she's not reflective, she works way better off the cuff. And she'd been given loads and loads of advice of really preparing, writing scripts out. And I remember coaching her and I was like, listen, remember, your behaviours are your superpower.
Yeah.
For her, going in too prepared and too scripted with her behaviours would have made her feel really inauthentic, and it wouldn't have come across in the right way. So it's about leaning into the stuff that you're really great at and living it through that.
Yeah, 100%, you're right. And mind, I've got to say, with all the preparing and what you're hearing and the way I am, it doesn't come without its disadvantages at times, because, you know, you kind of, you sacrifice a lot. I've sacrificed, like, relationships and being around family, and I've had to put a lot on the back burner when friends were going on holiday with you know, when you go on holiday with your friends when you're young and you want to, oh, let's go to Ibiza and all this. Like, that wasn't me. I was too, in my head was in football. So that kind of, the grown up part of things and the social aspect, that was pretty much zero. And that was purely down to the zone I was in and where I wanted to go to and what I wanted to achieve, you know.
And it requires that focus often, doesn't it? And things don't come without sacrifice, you know. For most of the listeners, a lot of them will be business owners and they'll be thinking, yeah, I get what you're saying, because it does, if you really want something, if it was that easy, everybody would be doing it. Yeah. There has got to be some requirement to sacrifice, or it's compromise in some cases, isn't it? You know, you make your choices, but we always have a cross check when we're doing things in our business around, like, sometimes we've got to remember we're doing this because for us. Yeah. So sometimes it has got to be, you know, you're making decisions based on stuff that are going to make you happy too. And I think it's, you know, obviously you enjoy playing football, so I'm sure you were getting enjoyment from that. So, you know, sometimes though, you've just got to make sure you're cross-referencing that. You don't forget you in that goal, yeah, mm-hmm. in the goal and the achievement mm-hmm. piece. Is there something that people might not know about you? Is there one thing that you could share with the listeners around, like, something that's interesting about your story or your journey that people might not know?
Yeah, I was selected internationally from 14 years old. So,
wow.
Yeah, I went to London on the train from Central Station at 14 with my little backpack on. My brother lived in London. He lived in Vauxhall. I've got a much older brother. And my dad had rang and said, can you meet Aaron at Central Station? She needs to get to Maidenhead. So he had said, yeah, I'll come and meet her. So, yeah, for to be 14 is unknown, really. I was very, very young and obviously scared and nervous and didn't know what to expect. And so that would have been one of my biggest ones. And secondly, really, like, standing, singing the national anthem, thinking that all the stuff that I've mentioned that I had put on the back burner that I couldn't do because I was so focused on getting to that point had all been worth it. And if it hadn't have been worth it for me, which it was because it was a big, that's what I'd worked for all my life, was what was coming next for the future. I didn't think it would come as fast after the England women won the European Championship, and that catapulted like the women's game years ahead for the sake of 2 years. But I do feel that now, looking back, when I heard the likes of Jill Scott, you know, say I was that inspiration, I was the face of women's football from the Northeast, and seeing, you know, I inspired her, but she inspired a nation. So to know that I've made that difference is enough for me, that it's made it wasn't about, like, yeah, of course I'm, you know, over the moon of what I've achieved, and I stand there and I go, yeah, fantastic. But ultimately, to see that someone the likes of Jill's had been able to get that profile, go on the likes of the Jungle, all of a sudden she's exploded and then pushed to see other girls in there, the likes of Lucy Bronze and a lot of the another four or five Northeast girls, then I feel like, yeah, I have done it, because it wasn't just about me running out on that field. It's made a much bigger impact behind the scenes, you know?
And I think that's such an amazing message, isn't it? It's like planting those seeds, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Where if you went back to that time, you probably had no idea that was what it was going to be.
No,
and
absolutely
it's
not
that instant gratification of it, mm-hmm. but it's actually seeds planted over years mm-hmm. and small moments of change mm-hmm. that then have come to this point, I think is a mm-hmm. really lovely takeaway for people, that actually sometimes you're doing things that you have no idea the impact that's going to have in the future.
Yeah, the fact that, like, when the FA have a legacy number that all the male footballers have from back in history, and they all get a number, and that's your number in history, basically. And then they announced that they were going to give it to the, like, start the women's. And that was a big thing, because, like, the women, we didn't have anything like that, which is what they've done. They've come to the end of distributing those numbers out. But again, to know that, you know, there's a place in history there, and it's got the ball rolling for, you know, again, people up here. And yeah, it's just, that's the feel-good factor for me. But you're quite right. You've always got to be aware that you never know what you're going to be impacting.
For sure.
And that's very, 100%.
That's lovely, 100%. Yeah. I think it's really important when we're thinking about legacy and what we're leaving behind. Mm. It doesn't have to be one big, huge thing. Often it's a footprint.
Yeah.
And it can be a daily piece. You might mm-hmm. be impacting someone's life in the moment, mm-hmm. as you are doing now in your team. But thinking back, you know, over your lifespan, like, those little footprints can have a huge impact later on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things I think is beautiful about some of the work that some of the people we work with are amazing is that they're impacting and they never even know they are. You hear people in the background saying, it was such and such that inspired me. Mm. You heard that from Jill. But there's lots of times where people do get that inspiration from people around them, and they never know that. So mm-hmm.
Jill's probably been saying that about you for years, but you heard it publicly because she was in a space where you could hear mm-hmm. that, but there's probably things that have gone on behind the scenes that you just would never know.
No, this is very true. I'd come across an article in the Chronicle where I read it, and I knew Jill because she was coming through as I was moving to Doncaster Bells, and I seen we both got our legacy caps the same day, which was nice. But yeah, you're very right. It's with anything, like, you sometimes put a big marker on somebody's life, and they take a lot away. And I've been fortunate enough to be able to impact that. I just hope I can continue, you know.
Well, that brings us on to what's next. I mean, we know you've got some big plans moving forward. Tell us a little bit about what your next goals are.
Yeah, so I'm doing a lot of coaching, one-to-ones. I've just opened a business under my name. And again, appearances. I'm doing a lot of appearances for birthdays, whether it's presentation evenings. And also, very much like yourself, I'm going to be starting a podcast.
Yay!
Yeah, so that's all new. There was the whole podcast bit, but we're in preparation of doing that now. I'm going to be looking at more of the lower leagues because there's a lot of focus, and even obviously the TV's got it all over at the minute of the women's WSL, yeah. The championship. Again, Newcastle picked that up, and there's a lot out there about that, but actual grassroots football, people don't know a lot about it, and there's not a lot, you know, when you look for results, not much out there. And I just feel that there'll be listeners out there that are interested in the lower leagues and, you know, say up and coming players, and we can talk about them. And so that's on the horizon. It's preparation.
Watch this space.
Watch this space. We'll do some links in the show notes that you can reach out with that. I've got a last question for you. You talked about how you'd been approached by someone to write your autobiography.
Yes.
What is one thing that you would like people to walk away with about your story?
Really, what we've spoke about. It's not about Aaron Embleton playing for England. It's not about me going to London. It's not about me running on the field and all the detail you'll probably hear behind it in the book, which is important so you can get the picture of it all. But ultimately, for me, again, it's down to mindset and really getting people to understand that you can do anything you want if you put your mind to it and you want it badly enough. It's how far you go with that and how much effort you want to put in to make that happen. And I've that sort of stamp has been everywhere all over my life, and it's never gone wrong on me. So to try and throw it out there to everybody else to say, look, you know, if you've got a dream, that dream out there, and it doesn't matter how big that dream is, it's never unachievable. It's not like, oh, well, I would never be able to do that because I don't have the funds for that. And make it happen. Go out there and get yourself sponsorship, get yourself funding, prepare right down and find out how you're going to get it. It might be impossible right now, but it's not fully impossible. You'll be able to achieve it. So, yeah, it's just to kind of make people look at it and think they're never defeated with anything. As anything's possible if you want it to be.
Amazing. Well, what an amazing way to end the podcast, I think. But thank you so much for joining us. We've loved having you.
Oh, I've loved being on. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Aaron.
No problem.
So let's wrap up from a great episode with Aaron. So the first thing that really comes through in that episode was around really anything that you set your mind to, you can achieve, even if there aren't role models that have gone before you. Really pushing through and believing that anything that you want to achieve is possible. We had a really lovely conversation about the thought process of legacy and how sometimes that is just footprints or seeds that you're planting throughout your life, and that actually you often won't see the impact of that straight away, if ever, but that actually you're often influencing people behind the scenes. So just believing that what you're doing is making an impact, even if you can't see it straight away in front of you. And Aaron shared a really lovely piece around, often we find with people who are more detailed or more reflective, they can feel like they don't perform as well in situations that require them to be quick off the mark or off the cuff. And actually, she shared with her detail preference that actually the way she overcomes that in that environment of commentating where you are required to respond and react quickly is the pre-preparation for her, and her years of knowledge overcomes that. So it's really just about remembering that if you've got those patterns, you can still overcome those things through the pre-preparation you do beforehand.
Thank you for listening to Misbehave. Follow us so you don't miss out on other episodes.